Remember now, we are in a portion of the book of Proverbs that is of, in a sense, a later origin than the first part. These are Proverbs of Solomon, but they are a collection that the men or scribes of Hezekiah, king of Judah, had copied out. And in the chapter that is before us this morning, we will find somewhat of a repetition, again, of some of the things that we've covered in previous chapters, but there will also be some new thoughts as well in this particular chapter that is before us. Actually, the chapter falls into three divisions. I have simply divided it like this. In verses 1 through 12, we have the fool discussed. In verses 13 through 16, we have the sluggard discussed. And then we have, in verses 17 through 28, the gossip discussed. So, we're going to cover the whole spectrum this morning. And you have to be careful when you mention the gossips. And the old lady said, she was in, if I remember the story correctly, how it went, the she was in the service and the preacher got on drinking and she said, "Amen, you're preaching." He got on smoking and, "Amen, he's preaching." And then he got on dipping stuff. She said, "You quit preaching now and go on to meddling." Sometimes you have to be careful what you get into. You quit preaching and go to meddling after a while. But we will look into this chapter. I think it'll be a chapter of interest for us as we see these things. Let's read the chapter in its entirety, then we'll come back and look at it in the outline form. As snow in summer and as rain in harvest, so honor is not seemly or a fool. As the bird by wandering, as the swallow by flying, so the curse causeless shall not come. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the ass, and a rod for the fool's back. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. He that sendeth a message by the hand of a fool cutteth off the feet and drinketh damage. The legs of the lame are not equal, so is a parable in the mouth of fools. As he that bindeth a stone in a sling, so is he that giveth honor to a fool. As a thorn goeth up into the hand of a drunkard, so is a parable in the mouth of fools. The great God that formed all things both rewardeth the fool and rewardeth transgressors. As a dog returneth to his vomit, so a fool returneth to his folly. Seest thou a man wise in his own conceit, there is more hope of a fool than of him. The slothful man saith there is a lion in the way, a lion is in the streets. As the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful man upon his bed. Good morning, folks. We're studying in Proverbs chapter 26. This morning. We're down to verse 15. The slothful hideth his hand in his bosom. It grieveth him. Bring it again to his mouth. The sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason. He that passeth by and meddleth with strife belonging not to him is like one that taketh a dog by the ears. As a madman who casteth firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man that deceiveth his neighbor and saith, "Am not I in sport?" Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. As coals are to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a talebearer are wounds, and they go down into the innermost part of the belly. Burning lips and a wicked heart are like a potsherd covered with silver dross. He that hateth dissembleth with his lips and layeth up deceit within him. When he speaketh fair, believe him not, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Whose hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness shall be showed before the whole congregation. Whoso diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth a stone, it will return upon him. A lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it, and a flattering mouth worketh ruin. All right, we notice now again the three divisions in this chapter. Verses 1 through 12, the discussion of fools, 13 through 16, the discussion of sluggards, and then 17 through 28, the discussion of gossips. So we will now deal with this chapter in this light. Let me make a few comments about the fool that the writer Solomon is discussing here. It's not one who is just mentally simple. We often speak of a fool today and we think in terms of just somebody who is mentally deficient, not necessarily a person of any wickedness or anything of that nature. We sometimes don't associate the real Bible setting of a fool as it's discussed here. But we simply think of mental insufficiency. Now let me say this, that I think that a person who denies God is of a mental deficiency, but that's another story. The fool that we have discussed here this morning is literally a person maybe of high intellectual ability, but who has determined to and deliberately is wayward, and especially away from God. So we're dealing with a person now that is not just simple and unable to perform, but we have a person that is capable of discerning and yet deliberately turns away from truth and light. And so the fool that's discussed here is a person that we need to take care of and learn from and to avoid if you see it in the setting. In verse 1, we'll notice that honor is not seemly for a fool, or it's not fitting for a fool. A man of this particular bent or persuasion is not to have honor heaped upon him or bestowed upon him. As snow in summer and as rain in harvest, so honor is not seemly for a fool. And both of these that he mentions are out of place. The snow in summer, if it does perchance fall in the summer, which is a great rarity, but there have been known cases of snow falling in the summer, it's totally out of place and out of character, out of season. And certainly rain and harvest, that's always a detrimental thing. You look for the early rain as you plant the crop. You hope for the latter rain that will finish the crop. But then in harvest time, you hope for the dry weather so that you can harvest the crop. And so we see the rain would certainly be out of place. My experience in bygone days when I worked on the farm, I've seen crops lost in harvest because the rain came right at the wrong time. And so to give honor to a fool, it's unseemly. Now, the world has a practice today of seemingly honoring fools. If I may vent my political wrath for a moment, I thought it was absolutely asinine to give the Nobel Peace Prize to the raghead. What's his name? Somebody call it. I can't. He was terrorist. Been terrorist all of his life. I'll think of his name in a moment. Somebody call it for me. The one that that supposedly has helped negotiate the peace. No, the other one. The one that's actually making the peace pact with Israel and is responsible for the Palestinians now in the West. Yasser Arafat. To me, that was absolutely asinine and a slap in the face of ever thinking American and any other peace-loving person in the world. To take a man that has known naturally, if I have gotten the facts correct, and I think I have, he actually masterminded that massacre in Germany, or masterminded that massacre in Germany of the athletes several years ago, the Jewish athletes. And then to turn around and call him a man of peace. Honor is not seemly for a fool, or it's out of place. And certainly, that to me, that would be an honor, or it should be a mark of honor to receive the Nobel Peace Prize. It should indicate somebody that had really peace at heart and mind and present that. So there's several things. One, I didn't see any value in offering and making that bestowal upon him. Secondly, it made that particular award of no consequence as far as I'm concerned. I see it in the proverb here. Things are out of place, and that's one of them, to heap honor upon a fool. And certainly to laud and applaud somebody for their achievements in life, and yet that very person stands as an avowed atheist and denies the very God of heaven, certainly is putting honor or giving honor to one who is unfitting for that honor. And then in verse 2, we'll notice that there is a cause for the curse, or as he said here, the bird by wandering and as the swallow by flying, so the curse causeless shall not come. God's judgment is going to fall for a reason, and certainly it's going to fall on the fool for a reason. There'll be cause for that man's judgment and what God will do in his particular case. We're discussing now the fool. Keep in mind, we don't fall into that category, but we will be around people all of our lives that will fall into that category of the fool. And there are some things that are certainly, appropriate for the fool. There is if honor is given to a fool, that is an improper bestowal. But there are certain things that are for the fool: a whip for the horse, a bridle for the ass, and a rod for the fool's back. There is certainly a need of punishment. I think that there is biblical justification for the caning that went on in Singapore. I don't know that it'll ever come to the U.S. It did prevail here at one time. It wasn't caning, but it did have dipping. Our history is rich, and it's interesting history when you read of the things that were done in America. There would be times because of some foolishness, and if a woman was a gossip, they'd dip her. Literally in the tank of water, and sometimes be close to drowning before it's over with. They put the man in stocks out in public, leaving for a day, so forth, as a discipline to persuade him to do what is right. And here Solomon said there's a badge that is certainly right for the fool, and that's rod for his back. Then in verses 4 and 5, we seem would have a contradiction. Now, there would be those that would have a heyday with this who would like to disprove the Bible and say, my, here's a contradiction in two verses. But understood aright, there is not a contradiction in these verses, but it certainly tells us how to handle a fool. First of all, he said, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him. Now, there's always this grave danger of us acting like the fool. And I won't call names, but let me say this. Years ago, there was I'm trying to remember even the issue that was prevailing. There's a lot of marching going on in our city. I can't even recall now. It may have been over the abortion issue. I don't think that was actually the issue at the time. But it so happened that the news media captured this scene, and there was a leading preacher of our city that was right up in the face of this other guy that was on the opposing side, and they were both explaining to each other that they were fools. I mean, you couldn't tell the difference, of course, unless you knew the sides by the demeanor, by the words that were used, by the actions that were presented. You couldn't tell the difference. And that's what Solomon's saying here, first of all, not to answer a fool according to his folly. If you go back a few years to the Cold War years, and when communism was supposedly making its great entrance into the world, there would be the people that would come to the council table, and the Russians, if you remember, they would sit and pull their shoe off and beat the tables and just totally disrupt a meeting and act like a fool. Well, if we had done the same, then we've put ourselves in the same category. And that's what Solomon here is intending that we understand. First of all, we don't answer a fool according to his folly, or we don't act like him. Hopefully a believer would have the facts. If all of the debates have ever gone on between the atheist and a Christian, and I didn't get to hear the debate, but I've talked to those and read of it, Mary Madeline O'Hare. If you'll notice in all of her debates, she's the leading, she's a spokesman for the atheist. And she would always deal with a situation not according to fact, but always try to disrupt and to belittle and malign the opponent in public, whether she be correct or not. But she always tried to control the conversation and so leave it that the opponent could not answer. Well, there was one man that answered her in a very precise manner, would not be flustered. The tragedy was that most times, after a few moments, the believer that should have been answering correctly would be in the same frame of mind as she would be, and responding in like fashion, just lick for lick, blow for blow. But W.A. Criswell, Dallas, Texas, said, entered into a discussion with her and a moderated meeting. She started this, but he would never let her frustrate it. After the feathers flew and all the dust had settled, he'd answer her in a precise manner with facts and consistently in that fashion answered her atheism with truth and facts. And that's the demeanor that we ought to have in a situation like that. That's the reason I probably would not do well in debate, and I probably would never get into one. I'd get frustrated after a while, and I'd want to hit somebody. And that's not the way to do it. That's what he said. Don't answer a fool according to his folly. Don't lower ourselves to that standard, unless they think that's just another fool. But on the other hand, also he said, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. We don't leave the issue unsettled if we were put into the position so that we had to declare our opposition to atheism. Then we ought to do it. In other words, if the fool has come and he's made his brags and his boasts and presented that case, we dare not leave it unanswered because there's a crowd that stands around and think, well, maybe he's right. So we see that we are to answer the situation that has arisen, or the subject that has arisen, but we are not to answer it according to the same folly as the fool. But we are to answer it with facts and straightforward truth. Certainly truth does not have to be apologized for. And if we stand on the truth and in the truth and for the truth, we don't have to apologize for that. But simply straightforward lipers in our case and leave it at that and answer the fool, but not according to his folly or in his folly, but rather in a proper fashion. And that's what Solomon intended that we get across in these verses as we dealt with the fool. And you'll run across the fool in your life, I'll guarantee you will. I had to answer one time. I met her at a door as I was visiting, and she said to me that I don't see how that an intelligent person, that was a compliment, I knew better, and an educated person like you could believe in God. Well, I answered in a polite fashion. I said, I don't see how anybody that is educated could not believe in God and left it at that. I did not want to get into the discussion with her as far as just a yeah, but I wanted to let her know that folks with some sense and ability did believe in God, that it was not a requirement to have an education to deny God and be an atheist. I did not want to leave the subject just lay and walk away from the door without responding to that foolishness and the fool. And so we see that there is then, we are to answer the fool with a good message and a proper response. Let's look at verse 8. Well, verse 6, let's go on and look at 6. He that sendeth a message by the hand of a fool cutteth off the feet and drinketh damage. Now, that's severe when we think about it. But to be dependent upon one who is a fool and to send a message by him and think it'll get there in the right form, it's just, you just want to cut your feet off and just receive the damage that's done, because that's what's going to occur by sending a message by a fool. I am persuaded today that God does not call out everybody sometimes that seems to think they're called to preach, because they have a foolish way of declaring a glorious, precious truth. And it seems, though, sometimes that some feel like that they are called to antagonize the whole world instead of present the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. I have known people that would just in a meeting or a crowd get on somebody for cursing, and it bothers me when they use the precious name of Jesus Christ in vain around me. I detest that. But some would then just respond with a flurry of anger and rebuke and say, "Well, I witnessed for the Lord today." No, you got on somebody about cursing, but you didn't deliver the message that God intended you to deliver. And that's the grace of God preached through Jesus Christ the Lord. So we need to be careful about it. The fool can't be trusted with a message. He said the legs of the lame are not equal. So is the parable in the mouth of fools. And that's true. The fool will not present it in a proper fashion. And then, this is an interesting proverb in verse 8. He that bindeth a stone in a sling, so is he that giveth honor to a fool. I mean, it's just of no value. Can you imagine? Now, we often think about the sling is actually not what with the yoke and the stock and piece of inner cube. That's a different instrument. The sling was actually, best I can find out, we tried to make the slingshots out of twine and a piece of leather, but I think actually the days of David you found the sling would have been maybe even one solid piece of leather or cut out of a solid piece of leather. There was a great accuracy in it as you'd learn how to handle a sling appropriately. And you could sling a rock. You read in the Bible of the left-handed men of Benjamin. They could hit a close mark and at a great distance with the sling. They were good. But if you were to tie the stone into the sling and then try to do something with it, it's absolutely worthless and valueless. And it's futile. And so it is, he said, to heap honor on a fool. It's just absolutely futile. It does nothing for him. It doesn't cause him not to be a fool. It does not change his demeanor. And it does not make him any more than what he ever was. And so it's vain and foolish. And then as a thorn goeth up into the hand of a drunkard, so is a parable in the mouth of fools. It's destructive and hurtful. And then he is, I suppose, is going to close out the thought on the fool for a moment. He says this, that the great God that formed all things, both rewardeth the fool and rewardeth transgressors. Then there is a judgment that God is certainly going to bring both the fool and the transgressor into. And as a dog returneth to his vomit, so a fool returneth to his folly. Now, the Apostle Peter used this same parable or same thought when he talked about the reformed unbeliever, the merely professed person, one that might have morally cleaned up their act for a time and maybe even openly, publicly declared themselves to be a follower of Jesus Christ, but he said after a time that they would, as the true proverb said, they would return as a dog to his vomit. And so it is. The fool seemingly just never learns the lesson, but always goes back to the same ensnarement and trap. I remember years ago talking with a narcotic agent, federal narcotic agent. And I discussed at some length with him. He gave the presentation at a PTA meeting in an elementary school. And after the meeting, I went to him and talked with him. And I wanted to know really what the success rates of recovery and so forth were. And I asked him, and he said you could put a man in the penitentiary for 10 years if he were a heroin addict. And he said when he hit the street, the first thing he'd look for was a fix. And here's the fool. He's like the dog that goes back to the same thing that has put him where he is, that he has had to throw up because of its poisonous nature and because it is not appropriate food, but he'll turn right back to the same thing and take it over and over and over again. He said, "Seest thou a man wise in his own conceit? There's more hope of a fool than of him. There are some that are worse than a fool." And that's a man that has it fixed in his own mind. This person is like the fellow that we used to talk about when I was a kid. There'd be certain people we'd say if you can buy them for what they're worth and sell them for what they thought they'd worth, you'd make a fortune. There are those that are wise in their own conceit. They have overestimated their own value. And here, Solomon says there's more hope of a fool than of them. So he puts that person into even a lesser case than the fool. Now we've dealt with the fool. Let's look at the sluggard for a moment in verses 13 through 16. And he said, again, the slothful man saith, there is a lion in the way, a lion in the streets. We dealt with this back previously, but he puts it in a setting here where there are several things that are said about the sluggard or the slothful man together. As we noted before, whenever the man says there is a lion in the way, a lion in the streets, the lion is not in sight, but he's looking for any excuse just not to get out and do what he ought to do. I am persuaded that God has given us life, and he's given us purpose in life. And it'd be well if we could find our niche in life and fulfill that niche in life. One man said this, and I think it's true, and I've taken it to heart, that God has given us enough time to do what he wants us to do in a lifetime. In other words, we have the time to do what God wants us to do, and yet we are prone sometimes to think of some reason why we don't go on and do what we ought to do. We talk about the lion that's in the way, the lion that's in the street. He may not be in sight, but we know he's out there, therefore we're not going to go outside the house today. That's the slothful man. He said, as the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. Now, I can think of nothing better than to picture an old barn that's rather dilapidated. And if you've lived in the country and around, you've always seen this kind of a barn. There's one old door that's never fastened. It's got hinges that are just hanging, but it just constantly flops in the wind. You can hear it bang and slap, and yet it accomplishes absolutely nothing. but it's always in motion. Well, so is the sluggard. He's starting on his bed, but he's not accomplishing anything. And then the slothful man. Now, this is a pathetic case. Now, I've known some lazy people in my lifetime, and I have tendency to laziness. I have to guard against it. But I've never been so lazy that I wouldn't feed myself. If somebody set a good table for me, I'll eat. But the sluggard, the slothful man, hideth his hand in his bosom. It grieveth him to bring it again to his mouth. I mean, here's a man that's lazy. When he'll sit at the table with a good fire before him and say, "Just don't feel like I want to feed myself. Wish somebody would do it for me." That's the case of the slothful man. The sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason or that can explain things. The sluggard seems to have an answer for why he can't get things done. More than seven men that can render a reason or can set the truth straightforward. And so we deal with the sluggard again. We see him, he's mentioned quite often in this book of Proverbs. And then there's the matter of gossips. And we, time and space forbids us to go into a whole lot of this today. We'll deal with it this morning. I'm teasing you about that. A few things that we'll need to see. There's some things that you just don't meddle with. It's dangerous to do so. And that's gossip. He that passeth by and meddleth with strife belonging not to him is like one that taketh a dog by the ears. We're not talking about a little playful dog now, but we're talking about a street dog. An old Syrian dog that ran wild in the streets. Bobby ran into one, or Billy ran into one. I was talking to him this week, and he's always been pretty well able to handle animals and handle dogs, but he's gotten into the sales business now. So he walked up on to a door, and he's telling me, and he didn't notice the dog until he's already up at the door. And he looked down, and there's a St. Bernard, actually it's a half-breed dog, great old big dog, and they groomed this dog so that his hindquarters from just his shoulders back are real prop real close. He said the thing actually looked like a lion. He believed. He knew he kind of had a problem, and he began to talk to the dog and patted him, and he thought everything was all right. But he said when he rung the doorbell, that dog just went crazy right up into his face. And he said he just boxed him as he went back out into the yard to get away from him. I'd like to see it. It'd been worth $1.50 just to see it. The dog did finally bite him before it was over with. But there's some dangerous things. And that would be to take a dog and catch him by the ears and not be able to turn him loose. I mean, if you get a hold of it, then you may not be able to turn it loose. And that's the idea of meddling with something that's not our business. And as we deal with gossip, some things don't meddle with strife that doesn't belong to you. It's never wise to get in between a husband and wife that are in a good argument. You're meddling with strife that doesn't belong to you, and you get a dog with the ears. You can't turn loose. If you got to do anything at all, try to take a stick and poke both of them, keep them away from you, and separate them, but don't get in the middle of it. There's some things, again, left alone. And gossip is one of them, best legal alone. It's like catching a dog. You can't turn loose. Also, the gossip is like a madman who casts firebrands, arrows, and death. I have mixed emotions about the fireworks ban in the city. I always hate to see freedom infringed upon. But on the other hand, when those bottle rockets come down firing and lighting on my house, I think sometimes I wish they wouldn't do that. Used to over in our area before it was taken into the city, around Christmas time, around the 4th of July, they just literally shower the house with the firebrands. And it's dangerous at times. One year it was such a drought, the grass was dry, and they set a pasture of fire that was coming right toward my house. And that bothers me some. But that's the gossip. It's like a man that casts firebrands, arrows, and ultimately winds up in death. And so is the man that deceiveth his neighbor and saith, I am not I in sport. And it gives us a solution here. Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. Just like wood is necessary for fire, you have to have a talebearer for strife to continue. I mean, if you eliminate the talebearer, it's like just taking wood away from the fire. In the country where I grew up, we had the pasture fires. It could dry in the summer, and the fires would sometimes burn hundreds of acres, thousands of acres. But if it's where you could, you try to set a backfire so that you could burn an area where when the fire came to it, the uncontrolled fire would literally die out because of a lack of anything. And that's the idea here. If we just simply eliminate the talebearer, then the strife ceases. As coals are to burning coals and as wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. If you pull one coal out of the fire, it'll soon cease to burn. But if you leave it in the coals, then it and it continues to burn. And the words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. Burning lips and a wicked heart are the like a potsherd covered with silver dross. In other words, a gossip. It seems like maybe they've got something to say and it's of value, but it's not. Can you imagine an old broken piece of pottery? It's laid over with silver dross, and you think, boy, I'm finding something of value, but there's absolutely nothing but an old broken pot. And so it is with the gossip. It's not of any value. He that hateth dissembleth with his lips and layeth up deceit within him. And when he speaks fair, it's not funny what he has in his heart in verse 25. And then, just on through, it'll ultimately return upon you and upon me and upon the gossip, if we gossip. Whoso hateth is covered by deceit, his wickedness shall be showed before the whole congregation. Whoso diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth a stone, it will return upon him. A lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it, and a flattering mouth worketh ruin.